From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The devastation from Hurricane Maria in Puerto Rico continues to mount. Although shipping restrictions have been lifted, the majority of Puerto Ricans are still without power. Clean drinking water is emerging as one of the biggest needs. And then in the next few weeks, there may be a large number of evacuees to the mainland U.S. Meanwhile, President Donald Trump spent his weekend at one of his golf resorts and dedicated a golf trophy to the people of Puerto Rico. He plans to visit the island on Tuesday, nearly 2 weeks after the hurricane hit. My guest is Sammy Namir Olivares. He is the communications associate with the Center for Popular Democracy. Welcome to the program, Sammy.
Thank you.
So first, can you explain a little bit about what the situation is right now? We are going on nearly 2 weeks after the hurricane hit, and I mentioned a majority of people are out of power. Can you give us a sense of the situation of a typical Puerto Rican at this moment?
The situation in Puerto Rico is catastrophic, a devastation, complete devastation, whether in rural areas, but also in cities. The full infrastructure has been destroyed, including the power grid, roads, bridges, and people are running out of water, running out of drinkable water, food, and medical supplies. We have people in the hospitals dying because they don't have electricity for the oxygen tanks. Diabetics are running out of insulin, and there's such like a logistical nightmare to get to many places. And there's also, you know, compounded, aggravated by the lack of coordination between local federal government with community organizations. And people are getting desperate because they haven't been reached by the local authorities. They are running out of water and food. And so the situations have been aggravated in the past few days. And that's what we're dealing right now in Puerto Rico.
Are rural communities impacted much harder than, say, people in cities like San Juan?
Absolutely. In this case, the whole island was totally impacted. Like the one, the less or the more, was hit by the catastrophic devastation of Maria, which has been the worst hurricane ever recorded since 1920s in the Americas. But rural areas, as always, and poor communities in Puerto Rico have been hit hardest because they are in flooding areas, because they didn't have enough supplies before, they couldn't evacuate, or they are being still living in shelters. And these areas also had poorer infrastructure, so their bridges have been collapsed, their roads have been blocked, and it's harder to get to their communities to bring supplies. So at this moment, there are communities who we haven't been reached. They haven't been able to connect with them because there's no roads or a way to get to them. And FEMA has been providing support there with helicopters or other ways. But the situation is more detrimental for low-income communities who are in the rural mountain areas and in the coast where a lot of people of color, African descendants, live. Yes.
Now, has the lifting of the Jones Act shipping requirements, shipping restrictions, has that lifting made a difference to Puerto Rico? And, you know, we should remember it took Donald Trump days to finally lift it after first saying he wouldn't lift it because the shipping industry has interests.
Yeah, I just want to go back quickly to the previous question, and that's precisely what we are doing. Like, we know very little about Puerto Rico, but what we have been connect with our organizations in the ground is that people are stepping up, and organizations, community-based organizations and community leaders are trying to step in this vacuum of federal response and get whatever help they can with their own cars, with their own resources, and we are sending them resources and fund. We're very limited, but trying to reach to these communities. And that's what we have been working on in this kind of like chaotic situation. And then in regards to the Jones Act, we don't know. But what we know is that it won't help, because this waiving of the Jones Act has been only implemented for 10 days. A ship to get to Puerto Rico takes like a week. So imagine the U.S. Comfort, which is a hospital, took from Connecticut, from Pennsylvania, I think like 5 days to arrive in Puerto Rico. So
this is the floating hospital that was finally deployed to Puerto Rico.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So the point of you know, lifting the Jones Act is to make sure that more ships can come in. And 10 days is not enough, and like already half past few days. And I think that the Jones Act is a very old law, a century old law, that it's, you know, increasing the cost for Puerto Ricans for over a century. And we have been carrying that burden of paying more, almost the double that Americans, citizens pay in the United States, in the mainland, because of this unjust law. So I don't think, and we are sure, that 10 days won't be enough. And that's what we're calling for, an immediate but also indefinitely removal of that law.
Now, is there a sense of the death toll from Hurricane Maria? As far as you know, how many people have lost their lives? Initially, it was thought that it was in the realm of a few dozen people.
Well, unreported. But what the government is saying, both local and federal government, they are sticking to the number of 16 people. That was days ago. There is investigative journalism, a very respected group called in Puerto Rico, the Center for Investigative Journalism, who have confirmed that there are dozens of people who have died after Maria, and their bodies are sitting on the morgues and hospitals without electricity, and even in the homes of people who have not been even reached, and they can even get those bodies to the hospitals. So there is also another article in the LA Times who went to a town in the West Town, which is 15 minutes from where I live, called Lajas, and the funerary homes have already done over 10 funerals after the Maria. One of them was the father of the former mayor of that town, Lajas, who died in a shelter after the power went off and his oxygen tank failed.
Oh,
so
wow.
We even have the father of former mayors dying in Puerto Rico because of lack of medical supplies and lack of power. And this is the untold number. So the government don't want to alarm people, and they don't want to be transparent about the death toll, because that will raise the alarm and the bell for people, the fact that this has been a very deadly, and that the response, the federal and local response, has not been as swift and as severe as it should have been. So the number is in the dozens, and there's still people dying even in the hospitals. Like the mayor of San Juan said in a video to CBS that two people died in San Juan, in the capital, because the hospital ran out of power. So the situation is very, very incredibly sad, but also outrageous, because the resources are there, like, but the lack of coordination is the one who, and the negligence and inefficiency of this response is the one who is causing many of these people dying.
Right. And as we saw in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans, the tragedy came in the weeks after the hurricane hit. You know, the actual hurricane itself lays out the devastation, and it's how fast and how well government can respond that then determines whether this will be a tragedy of massive proportions or one that's swiftly remedied. Let's talk about the mayor of San Juan. You brought her up, Ms. Yulene Cruz. You know, and I sort of am hesitant to spend any time on Donald Trump's Twitter wars, but it is important to see the way in which he has treated her. A very different relationship with the governor of Puerto Rico, Ricardo Rossello. But The mayor of San Juan criticized the federal government's response. And of course, Trump then hit back at her on Twitter in a way that shocked even those of us who feel like we can't be shocked by anything Trump does. Can you comment on his treatment of this mayor?
We can't escape the fact that anything in Puerto Rico isn't it political. The Puerto Rican economic crisis is political. The fact that people are dying in hospital is political. And the last colonial status and the treatment and the relationship of Puerto Rico versus the United States permeate every single aspect of our daily lives. The three major parties in Puerto Rico are based on status, whether it's pro-statehood, whether it's the status quo of the Commonwealth, or whether it's pro-independence movement. And we are seeing that transpiring now on the treatment from the government and the commissioner resident to the federal administration, the relationship with Trump versus the treatment to the mayor of San Juan, who is from the party, represents the party of the Commonwealth that we are living right now. And the only two people who have been praising the federal response is the governor of Puerto Rico, who is a pro-state from the pro-statehood party, and the commissioner resident of Puerto Rico, Jennifer Gonzalez, who is the president of the Republican Party. So of course we are, and this discussion have been missing. It's a travesty that is missing from the discussion in the mainstream media. Even the New York Times ha included three paragraphs in an article praising, including how Jennifer Gonzalez is praising the federal response, but failed to disclose that she's the president of the Republican Party. So of course, all this have been transpiring, and it's a tragedy that these politicians have been getting into these politics instead of helping to saving lives. This is no moment for politics. So what we are seeing here is Trump taking sides on politics in the island. And remember that Carmen Yulín is a woman, is a Latina, it's Puerto Rican, and is a powerful politician, and is trying to saving lives. And those are the demographics that he has rejoiced to attack.
He
So it, there
said,
is not a surprise, but it's a
right.
very sad situation that we have a president who should be fulfilling his duty and his responsibility to this territory instead of getting into fights in Twitter with a woman and a politician who is trying to basically saving lives.
So mostly what he has done in expressing himself on Puerto Rico is attacking people and then praising the federal government's response. He even used the word ingrates. He said, "We've done a great job with the almost impossible situation in Puerto Rico. Outside of the fake news or politically motivated ingrates, people are now starting to recognize the amazing work that has been done by FEMA and our great military." I mean, it's just amazing to see a president calling people ingrates for not appreciating his response enough. But he did dedicate a trophy, a golf trophy, to the people of Puerto Rico, Sammy.
It's outrageous that he calls Puerto Ricans ungrateful. First, because we're not asking for help, and we're not asking for any philanthropy response and assistance. We're asking for the United States to fill in and take its responsibility and assume its duty of addressing the decades-long inequalities and the path that had led us here. So the fact that we are basically dying in the hospitals and we don't have enough resources comes in after decades-long of inequalities and the relationship with the United States that are left us living on 50% of the island on the level of poverty. So it's outrageous that he's calling ungrateful when this local government and politicians are trying to do their best to serve the people of Puerto Rico.
So, what are the items that are most needed now? We talked about clean water. Now, I understand that your organization, the Center for Popular Democracy, is running a fund for Puerto Ricans and working with local organizations on the ground. What are some of the items that you are hoping people can donate money in order to purchase?
Right. So the day before the hurricane, we created a fund called Maria Fund, the Hurricane Recovery for low-income, poor communities of color who are always forgotten and are the last one to receive help from the federal or local government because of our experience with previous hurricanes and storms in this island. So we already help in these communities, particularly in Loíza, which is in the east town of Puerto Rico, and very low-income, marginalized communities in San Juan. So we're channeling 100% of these funds to these local-based, community-based organizations who already have these ties in and organizing models in these communities, so they can channel these funds and this assistance to these communities. And many of them have lost their homes, their roofs. In just one community in San Juan, El Caño Martín Peña, over 3,000 families lost their roofs. So I think at this particular moment, the cash funds and donations are the most needed. But also, we are collecting water and food is the most needed items at this particular moment, which we are still trying to remedy and mitigate the immediate need for the lack of water and food. But this fund is also dedicated to provide assistance for the long-term rebuilding of these communities to make sure that they rebuild in an equitable, just way. And we then address these structural inequalities that have been going for so long.
Now,
And making sure.
how can the funding, how can the cash donations actually help? Because don't supplies have to first reach the island in order for from the mainland in order for them to be purchased and shared within the community? Or will they are there efforts to charter flights or ships of aid to Puerto Rico?
So we have been doing all that is our hands to make sure that we get these funds to Puerto Rico. So the first thing that we are doing, first, this fund will create this week a board of advisors made up of 100% Puerto Ricans, five from the diaspora and five from the ground in Puerto Rico, to decide to which organizations, local organizations, we are channeling these funds. And second, how are we going to get that funds to Puerto Rico? It's true, we have been all organizations have been faced with challenges on how to deliver this funding and this aid. So what we're doing is we are doing wire transfers to the banks, to these organizations, but we're also sending staff. This week, we're sending eight of our CPD staff to go in personally with cash, and so we can provide direct assistance. And we're also buying the water, food, and medical supplies directly in the island, so then we can distribute it because there is a very limited amount of flights going to Puerto Rico and very limited ways to provide those funds to the island in plane. So we're starting to do it whatever we can, personally bringing them and buying them so we can distribute it as soon as possible to these communities.
Now, Sammy, I understand that you personally have family in Puerto Rico. Can you tell me a little bit about that, where they are? Are you able to keep in touch with them? What is it like for Puerto Ricans in the on the mainland who probably feel pretty helpless right now to help their own family members?
Yeah, personally, yes, I feel frustrated, overwhelmed, disconnected, and powerless. It's so demoralizing, the fact that United States is one of the richest countries in the world, that we have the most mighty, powerful military of the world with $600 billion, and I can see how our families can get water and food in an island so close from United States. So tomorrow marks 2 weeks since I haven't spoken with my mother. I haven't been able to talk to her. And the past week was traumatizing, the fact that we are seeing all this devastation in the island, and no, I didn't know anything about them, no word whatsoever of if they were alive, if they ran into an emergency, if our home got broken, and it was very frustrating. And what I know so far from my mother and my sister was after a week and a half that a neighbor found them and was able to send me a text saying that they were okay. So He has been very, very, not only for me, but for the 5 million Puerto Ricans who live abroad in around the world and in the United States. Puerto Ricans in the island are 3.2 million, but there's 5 million Puerto Ricans in the United States and in the world trying to communicate with their families, and millions of them have not heard from them. So my mother and my sister are in the south coast in a town called Yauco, and I know they're okay. And they are running with a limited supply of water and food, and they have no electricity yet. My mother's a disabled woman, 65-year-old, and she's alone now by herself. My sister now is in San Juan with my father, who is also a disabled man. And I've been, talking to him by phone after a few days that he just got signal. But this story is like, my family's okay, but I know that around them, there's a lot of people in need, running out of water, out of food and medical supplies, and it's very distressful to the fact that knowing that things are not well, are not okay there, and when they tell you that they are okay, it's that they are surviving. But the situation is very dire.
So, Sammy, finally, on that note, if you had such a hard time contacting your own family members, how likely is it that we're getting accurate media coverage of what's happening inside Puerto Rico? Local journalists may be having a hard time getting word out to the mainland, and even mainland journalists who might be trying to travel to Puerto Rico are likely not having access to good internet or phone service to even get the word out. I mean, things may be much worse than we even realize.
Oh, 100%. They are way worse than what media have been reporting. Let's begin to the fact that there is not enough mainstream media there. Just until the other day, there were like couple handful of reporters from the United States, David Begnan from CBS and others from Al Jazeera. But to the fact that the main TV cable news stations sent their reporters just a few days ago, when after Trump started tweeting and after Hillary Clinton tweeted and all the media attention shifted to Puerto Rico and people started dying, that's when they sent journalists. But still, we have a very few reporting from there, few Latino Spanish speakers reporters on the ground, and the ones from Puerto Rico are still dealing with running out of capacity media outlets. They have lost their homes, they are dealing with their families, they don't have cell phone, they don't have water, they don't have electricity. And what I've seen from Facebook statuses I've been gathering from friends, from journalists, is way worse than what media is reporting. So up to date, the mayor of my town in the South Coast does not have a cell phone. The police of my town does not, their phone are not working. The phone of the hospital are running out of electricity. The hospital is closed. So we're talking about a dysfunctional, chaotic government. Imagine whatsoever the media coverage. So in the couple of weeks that all this communication are restored, that the power is restored, and that journalists can get to these communities, is that we will see the real devastation and impact of Maria.
Well, Sammy, give out the website for the Maria Fund that the Center for Popular Democracy has set up.
Absolutely. The fund is mariafund.org.
And we'll post a link to that from our website later today. I wish you the best of luck
Wonderful.
with your family, with your community. We'll certainly keep monitoring the news. Thanks so much, Sammy.
Thanks to you.
My guest is Sammy Namir Olivares, Communications Associate with the Center for Popular Democracy, and we've been discussing how Puerto Ricans have fared from the hurricane. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also, find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.